The revolution will be broadcast.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio, your ghost man and demon hunter show, Demon Hunter.
I'm here. I just made it through the door.
What's going on there, little buddy?
It was a rush, but I made it. I got here.
It was such a rush. Hey, special thanks to all our homes, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Twitch, twitch.tv/ghostanddemon. Check us out live there, guys. Also, the SYL Project, give some love, share some love. Today, the SYLproject.com, Attendum Home Healthcare. Good people ready to help the ones you love, especially if you're in the Indianapolis area, because that's where they're located at. Paranormal Wave Radio Network. Thanks, everybody around the world, for being so very cool. Yeah. What do you think, Nathan?
I think, therefore I am.
You are. You are there. Absolutely. I'm glad you are there, because we made it to studio on time once again. In our 10th year for... How many times do you think we've been on air? How many times do you think we've done this?
Oh, my gosh. If you go back and you count the archives and add 3 and divide it by 16 and multiply it by days out on the road. And
Yeah, anyway. It's you can smell springtime in the air here in Indiana. Definitely nice day out today, man.
So the smell of manure?
The smell of poop and grass and everything. I'm dreading the grass coming back. You have to cut it, but we now have a new addition to the family. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, you did. We have Zoe.
Zoe?
Zoe is the boxer pit bull mix that we basically rescued, and she's only 3 years old. She's been with us about, I'd say 3 months now, 3 or 4 months. She's a great dog. So I didn't get my Boston Terrier that I wanted after the Red Room Riddle, the ghost story all my life that I wanted.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't get it, but got close. Got a bulldog type deal going down there.
And who named the puppy Zoe? That sounds like a name that a little girl might name a puppy.
Well, I don't know. She was already 3, so we had...
Oh, so you got her with the name.
Yeah, she had the name. She definitely had the name already, and she's very cool. But, hey, got a good show tonight. Another one in store, guys. We're going to the UFO topic again. Everybody's excited about that. Nathan, right? Everybody's excited?
Always excited to hear about them aliens.
Let's do this.
Don't get Donald Trump started on them, though.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that. He's in with the aliens.
Yes.
It's a top story tonight. Landing tonight's guest... He's the owner of perhaps one of America's most mysterious places and author of Ascension Code, one man's fight to save himself, his wife, and his rescued animals from invading extraterrestrials, which turns into an epic battle. Tonight's guest says he fought and killed an alien gray on his ranch. The author and the owner of Stardust Ranch, Mr. John Edmonds, stops by studio tonight, guys. Very exciting. You meet a lot of people in this field, Nathan. But very few, first time ever on this show, have I met a gentleman that says he did battle, hand-to-hand combat, with an alien from another world. Tonight, the only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Yeah.
My first question for him is going to have to be, Sean, if he did battle, why haven't they showed up with all their ships and tried to take over?
Well, maybe they're...
I've watched the movies. I know. You shoot one, they all come running out.
That didn't work good for Independence Day, did it?
You know? No, it did not.
Well, they were set on killing us right away. Well, maybe it's like anything else, here. And if you get in a fight with somebody, a bar fight, and somebody dies, you have to be tried. And I guess that doesn't make sense, right? Because they would have to... Yeah. There would have to be justice done. It's a lot of good
justice.
A lot of good questions we got tonight. Nathan brings up a good point. Where are the men in black on this? Because, you know, if they are working with the government, surely they might have like life alert bracelets. You know, if an alien slips in that. No, we're not making light of it, guys. But, you know, on this show, we keep it light and fuzzy. But tonight, definitely, we're going to get to the bottom of it for you guys. Stardust Ranch is very interesting, Nathan, because we've had a lot of guests. Our eye in the sky, Mr. Ryan Burns, author of Skinwalker and Beyond, he's been on the show. And he's talked about another one of America's most mysterious places, actually owned by Mr. Bigelow, multi-billionaire real estate agent, basically, but that makes pods to go to space. Before you can privatize it, but yeah, so now we have a new one. Stardust.
No alien influence there, none whatsoever. Today, I think I'll build a tower in Las Vegas, and tomorrow, I think I'll start building rocket ships.
And go to the moon.
What happened in between there? Oh, I bought this ranch.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, you know, I started researching, and we've talked about this on the show before, so I started researching stuff for tonight's guest, and one of the big hot topics on this show, because we've had Jan C. Hardin on, the head director of MUFON, you know, Dr. David Jacobs about the alien hybrids. We've had a lot of cool cats on over the years, man.
We have.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought we'd bring this up. UFO-related deaths and disappearances, the top five. I think it's five. Mm-hmm. One, two, three, four. Let's do top four because there's only four. But
Is there one in there you're trying to hide from the public, Sean? What? Are you working for the government, Sean? Is there a man in black standing right behind you right now?
My beeper just went off. It said, stop. Don't read three. Number three.
Before you read that one, I have to get in touch with my friends over at
the one
the Illuminati
order.
That doesn't exist. And make sure that, you know, it doesn't exist. Therefore, yeah. I can ask them if it exists and we can talk about it.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, not so, well, it's fairly recent news. We constantly, seems like today, hear about missing aircraft. Yeah, and we've heard about it in the past, Bermuda Triangle, stuff like that. But here's a case, brass aboard U.S. jet missing near Sioux, Salt Site Marine, Michigan. You hear about this one?
No.
Yeah, it says, this was an actual article about it when it happened. Snow and low visibility today hampered planes searching for the United States F-89 Air Force jet fighter missing over the bleak waters of Lake Superior since Monday night. The missing plane was too high. Two high-ranking Air Force officers. They weren't high. They were two high-ranking Air Force officers aboard. They mysteriously disappeared at 7:55 p.m. after taking off an hour earlier from Kinross Air Force Base. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Kinross Air Force Base, south of...
Ding, have a drink.
...of Michigan. We're not in that segment yet, so... Anyway, Kinross officials said that the plane was equipped with two rubber rafts, and each officer aboard wore a May West life jacket. The men were not identified. Four DC-3s were Trenton and Centralia. RCAF bases arrived today to take part in the search. The two pilots were never found. It doesn't say if the jet was found, though. I guess it would have had to been, right? Since they didn't have the pilots.
That's a secret, Sean. You're not allowed to let that information out.
Yeah, well, apparently Detroit, a couple pilots from there, some local pilots and stuff got involved. Here they go. They did find a flight without the pilots, and the rafts weren't deployed, and the plane wasn't exploded. So there raises an eyebrow, yeah?
I guess so.
Yeah, and then you got another one, Air Force jet missing over the... over lake, two aboard plane 160 miles north. And this comes from the Kawina Peninsula at Michipitan Island, 160 miles northwest of Salt Site, Maryland, where three pilots and the plane was found down without the pilots or the rafts, life-saving devices deployed. So, and they say they still continue to look for these United States Air Force pilots with no luck. Anyway, there's a lot of those. No trace of young pilot after reporting approach of UFO. Here's a good one. Melbourne boats and aircraft have found no trace of a young pilot and flying saucer enthusiast who disappeared with his plane after radioing he was being chased by an unidentified flying object. Huh?
Hmm.
You interested in this?
A little.
The Australian
Air... You're piquing my interest.
Okay. The Australian...
See, I haven't heard anything yet that makes me think that these planes just, you know, planes go missing.
Well, the planes get found, but it's highly suspicious when the pilots are not there. I mean, you know, and the seats are still intact. No chutes have been deployed or nothing.
Well, maybe they crawled away.
Maybe they just blew the hatch and climbed out in midair. I don't know. Anyway, the Australian Air Force said it has received 11 reports of UFO sightings from people along the coast of Bass Strait, where the plane disappeared Saturday night. The pilot, Frederick Valentich, 20, was on a 200-kilometer training flight when he told an air traffic controller in Melbourne he was being buzzed by a UFO with four bright lights about 300 meters above him. Controller said in the last message taped at Melbourne, he radioed, "It's approaching from due east towards me. It seems to be playing some sort of game, flying at a speed I cannot estimate. It's not an aircraft. It is flying past. It is a long shape. I cannot identify more than that. It's coming for me right now." Huh?
But did he disappear?
And a minute later, he reported, "It seems to be stationary. I'm also orbiting, and the thing is orbiting on top of me also. It has green lights and a sort of metallic light on the outside." Valentritz then radioed the engine of... his single-engine Cessna 182. It was running roughly. He last message sent, "It is not an aircraft." Valentich's father, Guido, that's the name, said he hopes his son has been taken by a UFO and has not crashed. The fact that they have found no trace of him really verifies the fact that UFOs could have been there. He said Valentich said his son used to study UFOs as a hobby using information he had received from the Air Force.
Now, when did this one happen, Sean?
This would have happened October
24th, 1978. Mm-hmm. And they hope he was taken by aliens. Now, anyone who's been watching X-Files knows exactly what he reported because we've seen it now.
Yes, we have seen X-Files.
It was on X-Files. So obviously this one's been solved.
Might be the last time you see it on X-Files, right?
Yeah.
You don't know if it's coming back or not. You were talking about that last week.
I know. Uh-huh. And I still do not see the uproar of the public.
Yeah, well, uproar, right, Fox? Why are you waiting for the public when you are the host, co-host of one of the most popular...
Because I called them to arms. I said, get out there and write. I did my part. Yeah. I'm here Friday or Sunday nights, giving up my time to help inspire... the public, the masses.
Yeah.
I say go out and do it. And I just don't see it.
Didn't see it.
People obviously don't care. They don't want more X-Files, I guess.
I want more. Best cases of alien abduction, Nathan. Run through these real quick. The 1961 Betty and Barney Hill abduction. Remember this one's been talked about on our show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Called the flagship case of alien abduction because
we've had relatives on this show.
We have, haven't we? Yeah, I think so. And the clothing was metallic. Magnetic when it came back. Remember that? They had readings on it. The car had high electromagnetic, some kind of force to it.
Well, so did your car after it got struck by lightning. So, hey.
That's true. It was glowing in the dark. It did glow in the dark for a minute. When it was 1967 abduction of Herbert Schimmer. Patrolman Schimmer passed through the intersection of Highway 6 and Highway 63 on the outskirts of Ashland, North Carolina. He saw what appeared to be red lights on a large truck stopped a short way down Highway 63. He decided to turn around and check it out. He drove the short distance down 63 and stopped with his headlights shining on the object. According to Schimmer, the object was definitely not a truck. The red lights that he had seen were blinking through the oval portholes of a metallic oval-shaped object. Apparently, he was found dead. 1969, the Buff Ledge Camp abduction. Only 7.5 years after the Betty and Barney Hill story, New England states would again host an alien abduction, Buff Ledge in Vermont. You know this?
No.
Buff Ledge in Vermont. Well, you're out that way. I figured you were hip to all this.
I'm in Connecticut. Vermont's pretty much another country.
Buff Ledge in Vermont would be the site of visitation by four UFOs, which would make revolutionary aerial maneuvers. Two counselors would suffer missing time and seek professional help. 1973, Pascuala, Mississippi abduction.
15 different people saw a large silver UFO fly over a housing project, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't talk about the people, though, being killed. Of course, the 1975 Travis Walton abduction was the 1975 Travis Walton abduction. It needs no introduction. That was the movie, Fire in the Sky.
Yes,
that was based on. And of course, you know, they interviewed Travis, and the whole thing was like humanoid people. They looked like us for the most part.
Right.
Yeah. So Hollywood worked its magic.
Kit made them into grays and reptilians.
They did. They did indeed. Okay, Nathan.
Okay, Sean. Hey, Sean, quick news out there. I have to send this news blast out there because it's in the news and it's today, but it doesn't really meet our weird news standards for later on. Sean, Nancy Reagan passed away today.
I did hear that. Hey, Nancy guys, it's always strange. It's always exciting. It's fun, weird, and it's straight off G&D Show Vaults, and it starts right
now.
Proceed, sir.
Hey, Sean, before we get into the disclaimer there, again, Nancy Reagan passed away today at 94 years old, I believe it was.
She sure did.
She died. She was born July 6, 1921. Passed away today, March 6, 2016, in Bel Air, Los Angeles. Former First Lady, wife of Ronald Reagan, President of the United States. And I was just talking about her yesterday and today. You know, I must be psychic.
I guess so. Yeah, it's a huge loss. She was a great first lady. Who doesn't remember?
You know, not really beloved by the public when she got started. After her bout with breast cancer, kind of softened her in the public's eye. Became more loved first lady. But originally, you know, not really. But I'm sure the nation now feels the loss that she's gone. But hey, Sean, like you said, it's weird news that's in the news where Sean and I take the stories right out of the paper because we like the titles. Of course, we don't read them first, so we make a lot of mistakes. When we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's G&D drinking game. Of course, if you're listening to us while driving in your car, please don't play the G&D drinking game. And of course, if there's anything important going on this night, tonight, please listen responsibly.
That's right. First up to bat, HuffPost Weird News. Thanks, guys, for giving us the story. Real-life Ghostbusters claim to talk to spirits at asylum. Huh?
Huh?
Yeah, we've kind of been doing that for a while.
What real life Ghostbusters... Have a drink, and I'm not even reading this story. What real life Ghostbusters have not claimed to speak to a ghost in an asylum, Sean?
Well, let's find out. That's right. Yeah, a lot of us. That's what I'm saying. Who you gonna call? This is from 2 days ago, guys. As anticipation builds for this summer's remake of Ghostbusters, real life spirit... Ah, there we go. We're seeking the spotlight for Ghostbusters again. Okay, real-life spirit investigators and their alleged quarry arrive on your television screens tonight in Destination America's Paranormal Lockdown. Didn't hear anything about it. Throughout this six-part series, Nick Groff, of course, from the GA Adventure deal, and Katrina Weidman, A&E's Paranormal State, can find themselves in some of America's most creepy and terrifying places. For 72 continuous hours, we do a tremendous amount of work on the history and the background of the deaths there, or anything dramatic that took place at this location. Groff said on the Paranormal Lockdown site, we're going into location to try and document groundbreaking evidence of the paranormal, something that hasn't been discovered yet. That is my mission. I'm looking for something that will revolutionize the way we think. In the following video that they put out there, you can see the first episode of Paranormal Lockdown, which appeared 2 nights ago, apparently, guys. They find themselves in an abandoned trans lunatic asylum in Weston, West Virginia, where they appear to have a conversation with spirits from the beyond.
Sounds like every other show that's ever been on, Sean.
It does. Very exciting. The hunt to prove once and for all that ghosts exist, or to answer the deeper questions of whether humans somehow survive physical death. So, did they find it? They didn't say here.
They claim. I don't know. It's
I don't know. There was a show out like that once before.
You know, I heard about that. They went into like the places and tried to stir things up.
And they talked to ghosts. Hey,
yeah.
On A&E. I don't know. I think it was somebody close to us that starred in it.
Yeah. I know. No bitterness here. Thank you for getting back to us, producers.
That's great. Great show.
Hey, Sean, I just want to shout out to this story because I think this is a really inspirational story. California homeless man lands job after handing out resumes.
Oh, man, that's great.
You know, it takes place in Sacramento, came out on March 4th. A homeless man in California found employment after waiting on the streets, on the local streets, and handing out printed resumes to passengers.
Okay.
Passerbys. Okay. Michael Martin shared photos of 52-year-old Frederick Colson, a former line cook, after he spotted him outside a grocery store in Sacramento.
Right.
The homeless man was sitting outside the of Smart and Final, not asking for money. Instead, he was handing out his resume with a sign that said, "Need work and hungry." Just multiple resumes handed out in envelopes. Apparently, Carlson moved to Sacramento from Washington 2 years ago, hoping to be a line cook for the Salvation Army. When the opportunity fell through, he was left homeless and pushed carts for Smart and Final store in exchange for the right to hand out his resume on their premises. So instead of running around asking for money, he handed out his resume until he found a job.
See, that's awesome. He applied himself.
To me, that's inspirational.
It is. Very inspirational.
He was excited about landing a job and was very grateful for the opportunity. He was up the night before studying the menu for hours. Pizza Rock provided Carlson with work clothing and a temporary place to live. So,
yeah, that's,
you know, what?
That's an awesome story.
That's the kind of program we need in this country to help people do that kind of thing.
You know, I just seen the other day, and, you know, I'm not knocking our homeless at all because that's a terrible thing.
Not at all.
And, you know, it should be fixed definitely before any other problems or people outside of our country. Absolutely, we should fix our own stuff. But, you know, I seen three guys at holding the, you know, you got them, the cardboard signs.
Oh, yeah.
And there was one on the left of me. I had stopped at a traffic light. One on the left, one on the right, and one right across the street. So they hit every one of the lanes. And, you know, I found myself thinking, I wonder if they're related or they just found a hot spot there.
Are they working in tandem? Do they split their tips?
And it must really work. I mean, they must get money. They wouldn't just go out there for nothing.
Yeah, it's...
I know I've given money before.
It's a tough world. I mean, Sean, I went through a period. I didn't have a place to live. You know, I was out in the middle of nowhere, couldn't get my way home, was living in my car. I know the situation. Mm-hmm. You work until you find work and you get yourself back up on your feet. That's what you got to do. And this guy did it. And I'm really impressed and inspired by him.
Let me ask you something. Have you ever been approached at the gas station by a man or woman that just ran out of gas and needs $5
to get back home?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There must be a website of these scams. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's happened to me. I've been standing there, and they walked up, and I was like, "Well, I'll tell you what, I will be more than happy to buy you a ticket to get back home, a non-refundable ticket, if you're willing to go with me to the police station, have a police officer wait with you till the bus comes, so I know you get on safely."
Uh huh.
And they were like, "No, never mind." That's it.
You know, it's terrible, man. It is terrible. It's a scam. They come up on you at a gas station and they say, and they did, they came up on my mom and Stacy when she's by herself. That's a danger. You know, people are afraid of that. You
definitely
don't bum rush
and you
people.
During my studies, I would go around and travel around and stay with people of different beliefs. And I got to stay at a Buddhist monastery for a while. So I have a lot of respect for Buddhists. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking through New York one day and somebody walking up to me and asking me for a donation for their Buddhist temple. And they slipped these beads over my hands and, you know, asked me to sign their book of life. And I sign it and I hand them a couple bucks. And they looks at me and goes, no, $20. I was like, I'm just making a donation to you. You don't have to give me anything. He rips the beads off of my hand and walks away.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And I was like, okay.
Hey, Nathan, we're at 7:26, buddy, and I just wanted to mention this. Are we going to do the Rot Talk segment tonight?
We should do the Rot Talk segment. I just wanted to say we didn't get to read this story, Sean, but Another new species found. You know my love for new species in the ocean. An underwater research craft has spotted a ghost-like octopus.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That appears to be an unknown species in the depths about 3 kilometers from the to the floor of the Pacific Ocean near Hawaii. So new species, Sean. You know I love throwing that stuff out there. And also tonight, Sean, before we go any further, I wanted to throw these two names out. Remember last week I was trying to get the name of who gave me the Dan Aykroyd autographed bottle of Crystal Head vodka?
Yeah.
I want to send my thanks out to Bruce Schillinglaw, who gave me that. And also a shout out to Travis Heckle, who is a new listener of the show, who's been out there going to other shows' pages and posting that he found our show. It's great. And, you know, to listen. So thank you. Thank you, Travis. Thank you, Bruce. And of course, Jill and Cleric Tavern and all our regular listeners. Thank you so much. So I guess it's that time, Sean.
It is that time, guys. You hear the music. It's time for Rot Talk.
Rot Talk, Rot Talk, Rot Talk.
That's a G&D original show, which series, which Nathan and myself came up with it, where each week we scour the nation to find you the latest and greatest in that show we all know and love, The Walking Dead, to find out or to tell you what's happening, what happened in the past, and what we think's going to happen tonight on The Walking Dead. Nathan?
That's right. Spoiler alert, folks. If you don't want to hear what already happened or what we think is going to happen, fingers in the ears, la, 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 la. Let's get going.
Getting closer to Negan.
We are. And, yeah. You know, week one, I made my predictions. I was one thing off. No big people died. Yeah. You know, I thought one of the original survivors was going to die. Didn't die. But we keep getting closer to Negan, and more little hints keep getting thrown out about a baseball bat there, Sean, that we all know and love.
Yeah. You texted me last week, and I can't think of it now. You had said something about the baseball bat reference. Do you remember that?
I made a reference to the fact that Glenn's wife, Maggie, said it's going to cost us something.
Right.
When they were discussing going to battle with Negan's group, and you mentioned that when they described Negan's attack, when they first showed up, they killed a young boy because he had to make his point right off the bat.
Right. Yeah. Right off the bat, he made his point. You know, it's funny, and I know we're running out of time here, but we know what's coming, or at least we know what the comic books say, and you know, enjoy these next few episodes with Glenn, because I got a feeling they're going to follow the comic book deal. But I found it interesting. Andrew Lincoln Rick Grimes has come to the point where they're like, hey, can you go, you know, we're going to go take out these guys for you, no prob. What happened to the old days where Rick was like, nah, not our problem. We're going to take care of ours. Sorry. Now they're like, yeah, we're going to go kill every one of them. We'll be back. So do you think it's a good idea? Of course, you know, bleed out what you know about the comic books. Just forget that. But do you think it's a good idea to load your group up in a van? If it was you, load your group up in a van and say, we'll just go out here. We know nothing about these people except they're harsh. They come and beat your butt and they take your stuff. We're going to go blow them up. What do you think?
Well, I kind of think that the survivors are becoming the Hessian soldiers of modern day. Because we all remember the story of the Headless Horseman, Sean, one of your favorite stories, a Hessian soldier. These soldiers were soldiers that their only import-export was mercenary work.
Yeah.
And that's what the survivors have become. They become mercenaries, and this is their bread and butter. They know what they're doing. And, of course, you know, that leaves us with the question, will one of them be taken prisoner? Will it be Glenn? Honestly, I got a feeling that a red-headed soldier is on his way out.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's coming. I think that Glenn is too important to their current storyline, and that we're going to lose a red-headed soldier in all this, Sean.
Well, we'll find out, guys, tonight on The Walking Dead. I seen you lost your cool last week, and you posted on Talking Dead, hey, man! Because they had one of the greatest fans of The Walking Dead on the show or whatever. And you're like, hey, dude, we've had like 5 of the 8 on our show. You know, I seen you'd lost your cool. You're like, come on, everybody. But hey, we got to go to break.
We have to go to break. And Sean, what's our band this evening?
Well, first, our guest, guys, just a reminder, he's the owner and an author of, he's the owner of America's Most Mysterious Place and author of Ascension Code, One Man's Fight to Save Himself and His Wife and His Rescued Animals from the Invading Extraterrestrials, Mr. John Edmonds, owner of the Stardust Ranch. Stops by, guys. Tonight's band is Read This Ever. Name of the song, I Like Halloween.
Yeah, 1980s.
Nathan. Yeah, it did, definitely. Nathan, Shadow Nation. We'll be right back.
I like Halloween.
AKA Froakie from the X-Files. You're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Enjoy it, because I know I do.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Tonight's guest, he's the owner of perhaps one of America's most mysterious places and the author of Ascension Code,
One man's fight to save himself, his wife, and his rescued animals from invading extraterrestrials, which turns into an epic battle. Tonight's guest says he fought and killed an alien gray on his ranch. Tonight, the author and owner of Stardust Ranch, Mr. John Edmonds. Mr. John Edmonds, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, I'm here. In fact, I've just been out working on the property all day, so... Well,
thanks for taking the time, buddy. We know you're busy. You got a lot of stuff going on. You have, what is it, Hopeful Hooves, the charity?
That's right. We do an equine therapy and equine rescue program, and we've been doing it off and on for, forever, since like 1998. And we rescue horses that have been abandoned in the desert. Some of these horses are starving. They've been everything from dying of thirst to you name it. We bring the horses back to the ranch. We retrain them. You know, we retrain them to work in programs to help our vets, right, and to help kids with disabilities, and usually women that are survivors of domestic violence. That seems to be something that really works out real well to help people.
Do a lot of horses just get abandoned in the desert?
Unfortunately. Since 2008, there have been hundreds of them, and we've only been able to save a few of them. We currently have 19 horses on property.
My God. I'm from Indiana. Nathan's from Connecticut. That's just something you don't see every day. Horses roaming around, you know, you wouldn't think people would do that, but I guess it's cheap to some people to think that way instead of going to a vet, right, if they're sick or...
Well, the thing is this, and that is that it costs... For the bare minimum to take care of a horse in Arizona, it costs about $3,000 a year per horse.
Wow.
And I mean, that's like if you're actually know people and get, you know, good prices on hay and on all the supplies and, you know, medical stuff. So, you know, horses are really, really expensive. And, you know, here in Arizona, you know, the recession has just really been terrible. You know, a lot of people out of work, a lot of people lost their homes.
Yeah.
And, you know, a horse is a luxury that unfortunately people take on, and then they realize later on that if they had to choose between feeding their horse and feeding their children, they're going to feed their children.
Right.
But aren't there like agencies out there that if you have a horse and you can't keep it, you can put it up for adoption or something, not just leave it in the desert?
People are ashamed. You know, what happens is that, you know, they just keep putting off facing the consequences, and, you know, it's kind of like sliding down a plate glass window financially. You know, they just keep sliding, and eventually they get to the point where they just look at the horse and they say, wow, you know, you got to go. And they load them up. They take them out in the middle of the night out in the desert, and they say, wow, horses are wild. There's wild horses all over, you know, Arizona, you know, Wyoming, Colorado, you know, just all over the West. And so they figure a domestic horse isn't that different than a wild horse. Maybe they'll figure it out. And so they just let them out of the trailer and, you know, they dash back to the house, you know, sort of the midnight, you know, kind of thing. And I know where they take them off, you know, because they've been doing this now for many, many years. And what happens is we end up with herds of horses out there that are literally being picked off by, you know, coyotes, wild dogs.
Yeah.
You know, starvation, because the desert is not a place that, you know, is a good environment for a horse, in terms of there's very little grass, there's very little anything for them to eat. You know, they're not like goats. Goats can eat anything. Cows, you know, can eat just about anything. But horses, they have to have decent grass. They've got to have, you know, supplementation.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're not used to being, you know, just dumped out there and left to fend for themselves.
And a domesticated animal, so different than
exactly
a wild or even a tamed animal.
Yeah.
You know, a domesticated animal just loses that instinct.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. You know, and the other thing is that, you know, most of the roads out here, you know, people drive 65, 70, you know, two-lane roads. There's no lights or anything out there. And the horses, you know, they'll walk out on the road and just stand there.
Yeah.
And people, you know, will hit them. And, you know, you can't imagine what a bad accident that would cause.
Yeah. And, of course, all our listeners out there, it's hopefulhoofs.org. Go there, check out John, and they can help you out, right, John? Donate and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. We're a nonprofit. You know, this is something that, you know, I started doing Hopeful Hooves because of the fact that I was working at the Arizona State Hospital as a therapist and as a counselor. I got my back broken by a patient on while I was on duty there. and I ended up having to go through a lot of rehab in order to learn how to walk again. Yeah. And at the end of it, I started working with horses. And the horses have an unconditional love. You know, they don't care whether you're crippled. They don't care whether, you know, whether you're anything. I mean, to them, you're just a being. And it's like, if you're out there to do something good for them, they automatically accept you. And, you know, the horses really helped me to get my feet back underneath me and to learn to walk again and to be able to get my life back. And I thought at the end of it, you know what? If this worked for me, how many other people could this help? Yeah. And so I started studying the program. I started writing the program. I started, you know, working with the horses. And today, you know, after all these years, we actually are in a position where we can do something to help people.
I think that's amazing, John.
It just amazes me. Yeah. Living out here in Connecticut, I just know so many people who go out on the deep end just to have a horse. Mm-hmm. And that's why it shocks me to hear about somebody who would do that. And I'm so happy to hear that there's some place like yours. Now, when this happens, do you on your ranch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I end up going out and finding them. They don't find me. I mean, at the beginning of the recession, when it was really bad, people would just drive up, tie their horses outside the ranch, you know, to our front gates and leave them. And I can't tell you, I mean, at one point we had almost 100 horses here, and this is a 10-acre property. So you can imagine how crowded it would be to have 100 horses, you know, but we found good homes for them. You know, we put them in programs and we worked our way through it. But, you know, I can't tell you how many skeletons are laying out in the desert from horses that, you know, just never made it as far as our ranch.
Yeah, that's terrible. Now, you know, John, we have heard about you because we've been on the air. This will be our 10th year coming up. And we've heard about you for a long time. And we finally said, you know, we got to get John on. We've had Bigelow Aerospace. We've done the Skinwalker Ranch. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But Stardust Ranch. Can you tell us in detail how you got involved with the ranch and some of the history about it?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My wife and I bought the ranch June 1st of 1996. We were not looking for any kind of paranormal or ET kind of situation at all. All we wanted to do was just have a ranch out in the desert, far away from, you know, the city lights, and just to be able to, you know, relax and take it easy and have, you know, have a good time, be able to ride horses or do whatever we were going to do. Yeah. And, lo and behold, we bought this place, and from the first day on, we started having issues, and it's been like that now for 20 years. It'll be 20 years June 1st, and we're still the original owners. We're still doing exactly what we came out here to do, and, you know, we've had a lot of encounters with ETs. We've had a lot of encounters with what looks like ghosts, spirits, lots of, you know, ET aircraft in terms of UFOs, and you know, it's just an ongoing thing.
Now, John,
it happens every week.
Now, John, a little information about you, because you say you went out there to buy a ranch to get away from the city lights, but you are not, you know, what somebody would technically expect to be a rancher. You are a very well educated man.
Yeah, I've got a master's degree. I've got a bachelor's degree, counseling, social work. You know, I spent a long time working with the Superior Court of Arizona. I worked with City of Phoenix, you know, writing and designing programs for substance abuse counseling. I've done a lot of things, you know, professionally. I was in the music business. I still work with, you know, music and doing things. And I'm, you know, a writer. I'm somebody who works in broadcasting. You know, I do a little bit of everything. I've always believed that, you know, if your heart tells you you should try something and it's positive and you have good intentions, you should go try it.
Absolutely. Now, you know, you said you and the wife were the original owners of the ranch. Does that mean that there was no one before you guys that had the property?
No, I'm saying that, see, it's kind of weird. You know, this property was built in 1977 and, excuse me, it's had a number of owners over the years. But this property has just been kind of like a slow motion train wreck as far as most of the owners go.
Yeah.
The original person who built the ranch built it as a surprise for his wife. And, you know, he got it all done. And he's like, come on, honey, let's drive out there. I got something to show you. And she was horrified.
She's like, terrific, thanks.
And it was like, yeah, I mean, it just kind of like, I'm sure it kind of blew his mind at the time. But
it's 2 hours to the closest grocery store.
She didn't like it because she didn't like the energy. She said that she felt like she was being watched, and she just got really creeped out by all of it, you know. And she's like, why do you want to live, you know, way the heck out in the middle of nowhere? And so that didn't go well. And he ended up, I guess, selling the ranch. And the next people that bought it were a family that bought it with the idea that they were actually going to do ranching here. And so they got in the cattle business, and apparently they were very successful. Until one day, the day before the eldest son's graduation from high school, for some unknown reason, he took a shotgun, put it in his mouth, and blew his head off.
Oh, wow.
Right in the living room.
Oh, man. And that
family just kind of fell apart after that. I mean, somewhat understandably.
Yeah.
And everything just, you know, kind of went south from there. And they ended up losing the ranch. And then the ranch went through about 10 years of being picked up by nefarious entities, is what I would describe it as.
Mm-hmm.
People that decided to use it for a whorehouse, people that decided to use it for off-track betting. There was a bunch of guys that had decided they wanted to, you know, create some kind of a fort here, and they were anti-government guys, and they, you know, they turned it into kind of like a, I don't know, just a weird place where they apparently they held meetings and did all sorts of stuff to try to, I guess, just kind of piss off the government.
Yeah.
Anyway, the way it worked out was that they, each time somebody took it over for an evil purpose, the energy on the ranch not only made them that much stronger, but it actually got them to the point where they got in a lot of trouble. People died. The ranch ended up going back to the bank. And so it sat idle for a while. And what ended up happening was that it just fell apart.
So it's
finally,
almost like
folks bought it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, John, please go ahead.
Okay. Some folks bought it, threw some paint on it, turned around and started marketing it. And Century 21, the guy I was working with, heard about it. And he called me up and he said, John, I might have the right property for you. And so my wife and I, we took a ride out here from Glendale, Arizona. And we looked at it. My wife was kind of like, oh, God. And I was like, wow, this is cool. I like this place. I mean, as soon as I saw it, I said, that's it. I want it.
Yeah.
And my wife looked at me and she was horrified.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the bad elements out there. It seems, you know, whether it be with, and you know this stuff, haunted homes, haunted properties, stuff like that, they always say like attracts like. And it seems like it ran off the good and attracted the bad and sucked that energy in somehow, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it still does that. I mean, what's really weird is that, you know, we have people that you know, that we're friends with that come out and, you know, they'll hang out here at the ranch. And it's like within 20 minutes after they've been here, their behavior begins to change a little bit. It's kind of like they drank too much coffee, or they, you know, have an upset stomach, or they start getting a sore throat, or they start hearing what they call crickets. At least that's what they tell me. And it feels like they're having sort of a high frequency sound in their ears, almost like a bad case of tinnitus.
Yeah.
And I've been here so long that, you know, I just ignore it all. It doesn't really bother me. I don't get worried until I start seeing stuff that I got to pull a sword out for.
That makes me ask too, because before Sean even asked, I was thinking of this. Do you and your wife ever feel that energy, realize like you're arguing or you're having a really bad day?
Yes.
Or something, and just
absolutely
look at each other and go, it's not us, it's the ranch.
Yeah, actually, we see that sometimes. I would say probably maybe once a month. You know, we'll argue. I mean, you know, we've been together 25 years almost. And, you know, people that have been together a long time, you know, that they kind of, their fights or their arguments are kind of
yes,
repetitive. And, you know, she and I will bang heads over something, and then we realize that neither one of us really care about what we're arguing about. It's purely because of the fact that the energy is just amping up our argument. And then she'll look at me and I'll look at her and she'll say, let's get off the ranch and go get some coffee. And we do. We just get in the truck and off we go. We'll go get coffee or whatever. And usually by the time we get the gates locked behind us, we already feel better.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That. How do you guys protect yourselves? Is it a Christianity thing?
It's faith.
Just faith.
Yeah, okay. It's just faith. I mean, you know, I've been on my own since I was about 12. And, you know, I learned a long time ago that the only real asset in the world that matters is your faith in God. Mm-hmm. Because no matter how alone you are, you're never really alone if you've got God in your life. And, you know, so for me, you know, that's sort of always been, you know, my catch-all in terms of being able to, you know, stay on the straight and narrow and being able to, you know, get balanced, you know, no matter what happens.
You know the movie The Rite about the Catholic priest? Remember that, Nathan? We had the real priest on, Father Gary Thomas. And he came on and he talked a little bit about the aliens. And that he didn't say aliens being a demonic entity or anything. But he did make reference, as a lot of people in, you know, religion have said, be careful about calling these entities, you know, beings from outer space, that they might be satanic, demonic. What's your thoughts on that, being from a Christian background?
Well, I would tell you this, and that is that, you know, over the last 20 years, we've had enough experiences where we've met enough different ETs that they're kind of like people. You get some really bad ones and you get some really good ones. And, you know, you can't really just label anybody anything. You just have to take it on a case-by-case basis. You know, I mean, the guys that we've had real problems with are the Grays. And, you know, apparently there's a number of different types of those as well, because now we're seeing different types of them here on the ranch. And not all of them are, you know, just a little pain in the asses that we have had to deal with in terms of the little four-footers, okay? The ones that are taller don't seem to be so bad. I mean, it's not like we're communicating with them. It's not like we're sitting down and having, you know, iced tea with them or something, but they seem to be more thoughtful and they seem to be more interested in a bigger picture kind of situation than the little ones. The little ones have just been a nightmare to deal with.
Do the animals react to them?
At this point, not really. I mean, the horses, as long as the horses get fed and you go out and love on them, they're fine. They could care less. I mean, they've had, you know, triangles that were hundreds of feet across, that were 150 feet above them. And they just kind of look up at them and they go, that's interesting. They go back to eating. So, you know, it's not, they're not particularly reactive anymore. They've been doing this too long. You know, the dogs, on the other hand, I tell you what, the dogs, they get really, really, really into trying to defend the place. And, you know, they're just all about, these guys don't belong here, they smell funny, you know, they got to go.
You know, do you ever have those, and I definitely want to get back to you setting the scene the night of the battle, because everybody wants to know about that. But do you ever, when you're setting at your house, of course you have good days and bad days, do you feel the energy shift when these portals, and we'll talk about that a little later, but when the portals open and these beings come through, can you feel it?
Yes. And I'll tell you, the thing that's interesting about it is you can actually feel it kind of leading up to it. I mean, we have been able to detect that about every 72 days, there seems to be an acute period of maybe 48 hours where all hell breaks loose. And that's when a lot of stuff is seen. That's when a lot of things happen. But you can tell leading up to that, you know, something, the energy becomes even higher than normal. So really it's just a matter of where they are in the cycle.
Hmm. Now, if you can, John, set the scene the night or the day of this battle. What happened? Did you wake up and feel, uh-oh, this is something bad going to happen today? How did it come around and what happened?
Well, what I would tell you is this, and that is that the insight that I have has really, really increased in the last couple of years about how a lot of this stuff works. Back when that occurred, I didn't have any insight. I had been in a situation where for well over a year, it just seemed like we were at war with these things. And we were having sometimes 2 and 3 times a week where we were having incidents, and they were really bad. I mean, there were situations where we'd be in bed, we'd be asleep, and something would happen, and I would get the feeling, you know, just this weird feeling like something's watching me. And, you know, I didn't want to wake my wife up. And so, you know, I would just wait until they showed up. And then literally the way these grays travel, they kind of just blink in and blink out. And so you can feel them, but you don't necessarily see them right away. Until they want to be seen or until they actually make physical contact with you. And that particular night, it was actually early evening, and I did not, you know, realize that we were going to have any contact. And, you know, it just happened. But it was one of those things where, you know, I keep literally a samurai sword handy, and it kind of moves from room to room with me as necessary. So it's like if I'm feeling kind of a little bit agitated, or I'm feeling maybe there's a little anxiety, that tells me that, you know, I should keep that sword to the point where I can actually, you know, see it directly. I don't want to be in a position where I've got to run to, you know, a different room in order to get it.
Now,
I
John,
at some point I could break down and buy a few more of them.
John, you know, in your previous line of work and my previous line of work, normally if somebody would tell me that when I feel agitated, I have to have my sword with me, that would normally be a bad sign.
Well, I understand, you know, but the thing is this, and that is that, I mean,
you get the joke. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, no, I get the joke. I would tell you this, and that is that everything that has happened here is based on personal experience. And, you know, we've had so many professional people come through and check this thing out and see it for what it is. You know, it is what it is.
Have you considered have you considered putting up like cameras just around the property so you can keep an eye on everything?
Yeah, I got to tell you, and this is going to sound bad, but, you know, things cost a lot of money these days. And, you know, spending what I spend on, you know, keeping these horses fed and keeping the ranch up, just to keep the horses fed properly and do all the medical, do the work with the dogs that needs to be done. Our expenses for the animals run about $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can tell you right now, we don't even get a third of that in donations every year.
Oh, believe me, Sean and I understand that. Our rule is cheap is good, free is better.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like we just don't have the money to be able to go and put in some kind of exotic, you know, video system. I'd love to have one. I mean, you know, I have told people that, you know, this is an ongoing situation. You know, we've already demonstrated that we're doing our part and that, you know, we're going to continue to do our part. So if somebody wants to donate a video system, you know, it's tax deductible. Bring it out. Put it up.
Absolutely.
Hook it up, you know.
Put your money where your mouth is.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. Everybody wants to get behind a project, it seems, until you say, hey, we're open for donations. Wait a minute. Yeah. But
yeah, you know, and that's why I tell people, you know, you don't have to get money. I mean, we love money, but you know what? If you want to do something that's going to, you know, specifically help a specific aspect of this ranch, you know, we'd love to have a front end loader to be able to, you know, clean up our pens and to be able to, you know, move things around the property. If you got one that's just hanging out somewhere, sitting around, you don't want it, donate it. I'll give you a tax deduction.
Well, we're going to have to.
If you guys decide that somebody wants to put up a video system inside and outside the house with a DVR, no problem. We can do it. Now, that would not be something necessarily that I could give a tax deduction for, because it has to be something specifically for Hopeful Hoofs.
Right.
But, it would be a security system for the ranch.
Yes, for the horses.
Yeah, I guess it would probably, we could probably work it out. It's just that we are very, very, very good about making sure that everything that we do is totally legitimate. And so, you know, we don't cut corners when it comes to anything with the taxes or anything like that. We have to be very, very responsible about it.
Well, Big John, the burning question on everybody's mind, you've answered, been asked 1,000 times. You fought this thing. You won. You said they don't really appear. I mean, they do, but you don't see them. They're in and out. What's different about this little booger that decided to, hey, I'm going to come out and I'm going to face this guy? What was different about this entity, and where's the body? Everybody wants to know that.
I know. Everybody wants to know about the body. Right. What I will tell you is this. If you don't take the head off when you kill him, the body stays. If you just run them through and you don't have a chance to do anything further, they just disappear. That's the whole thing. I picked these things up and beat them against the brick walls of my house because I didn't have a weapon. And, you know, I mean, to the point where, you know, the fluids were squirting out of them and they just disappear. If you get them with a sword, you run them through, what will end up happening is that you'll probably get some kind of material on the end of the sword. You will see the fluids coming out of them. It's not really blood. It looks more like some kind of fluid, like an oil or some kind of, almost looks like transmission fluid, to tell you the truth.
Oh. Yeah, okay. I got a picture on that. Now, when this guy came, okay, this happened in the house, the battle, right, John, or outside?
Yeah. Almost everything has happened inside the house. I've never been really fortunate enough to be able to get my hands on one of these things outside of the house.
Yeah. So you're watching TV or you were in bed, or I didn't know if you had said, and all of a sudden you hear something behind you, or this thing just walk up on you and come at you, or what?
Well, I mean, we've had two, there seems to be two areas that have the most contact. The master bedroom, usually when we were in bed, and it would be sometime between midnight and 3 a.m., or we added about 1,000 square foot sun porch on the back of the house before it goes out to the pool.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they seem to like to land, for lack of another reason or another word, in that area. Now, they always come in threes or more. So they never just show up by themselves.
You know, it's funny he says that, Nathan, because John's talking about the threes. And as long as we've been in the paranormal stuff, again, people always say the Holy Trinity and 3 a.m., midnight to 3, the witching hour, stuff like that. What do you think about that, John? I mean, think there's any correlation there?
I don't know. I mean, we could speculate till the cows come home. But
the horses.
You know, all I do is I can only validate what I see.
Yeah. Yeah, this is
true. See, and that's interesting because people ask Sean about our investigations, Sean and I, about our investigations all the time. And Sean and I like to tell people we're less about the investigation, and more about the experience.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, so you killed this thing, or you think you did. I mean, it disappeared.
Oh, I know I killed it. I know I killed it. When I used a samurai sword with a forward thrust right through the abdomen, about 6 inches below the throat, and what came out on the end of the sword was a piece of meat the size of a large grapefruit. And I took it out of there, put it in a bottle, and I put it in the refrigerator. I have a special refrigerator just for dealing with these kind of things. And, you know, I saved it and made arrangements. I made some phone calls and managed to get hold of somebody that could redirect me to deal with a gentleman in Grass Lakes, Michigan, named Levengood. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Levengood gave me very specific instructions on how to prepare the sample and how to make sure that it wouldn't be contaminated. And then I FedExed it to him.
Wow. And what did he find?
Well, it took him a long time. It took him about 6 months before he was able to get back to me with, concrete information. But what he got back to me with was a report from two different universities in Michigan, apparently. And what they said were, this sample does not match anything on this planet. It's neither animal nor is it plant. It's more like a combination of both. They found chloroform in the sample, and it appeared to be part of the actual tissue, like embedded within the tissue. And then on top of that, they found, you know, protein strands and tissue that would almost look like animal tissue, but it wasn't the same. And they could not link it to any other animal or plant on Earth.
That's interesting,
John. And so Dr. Levengood told me, he goes, John, you've got the smoking gun. He says, you have absolute proof that alien life is present currently on Earth.
Now, Sean accuses me of never asking these questions because he believes I'm in league with the Illuminati.
Well, you are.
But have there been any Men in Black issues?
We have had Men in Black here. It's interesting. We've had an evolution of the Men in Black because we had the original, almost like the, you know, the mythical Men in Black that show up with, you know, the SUV, and they show up in the black suits and they got the sunglasses on and they look like they, you know, really are corpse, you know, colored. I mean, in terms of, you know, dead white skin, which here in Arizona, nobody has dead white skin. I don't care, you know, if you spend your entire life indoors, you're still going to get a tan of some kind.
I was going to say, Shawnee, just describe me.
Yeah, pasty. Pasty Connecticut person.
You know, but, you know, we saw these guys. They literally pulled up on a dark-colored, you know, SUV, like a GM Suburban. And two of them got out, and they walked up to our front gates. And our front gates are electronic. You can't get past those front gates. They're 7 feet tall. They're wrought iron with spikes on top. You can't get in unless I let you in. And before I could even let them in, they walked right through the gates.
And you witnessed this?
I witnessed it. I happened to be standing outside with another friend of mine, and we were cleaning guns. And we had a whole picnic table full of guns. And they walked right up through the front gate, right up the path, walked up, stood about 8 feet away from the table full of guns, and without revealing who they were, where they came from, or why they were there, they had no identification. They refused to show identification. They told me that they did that I should no longer make any more reports on the internet about the lights in the sky that we see or any of the other events that were happening. And you know, I looked at them and I said, "Hey guys, what's on that table over there?" And they just kind of looked at me. And I said, "Do you see that AK-47 over there? Do you see that AR-15 over there? Do you see all those handguns over there?
Yeah.
Today's gun cleaning day. Mm-hmm. You picked the wrong day to come."
Right.
And they just kind of looked at me. There was no expression on their faces, very deadpan. And they turned around and walked away. That was the end of it.
Now, you know, and one of the questions I had, John, you know, of course, about Bigelow Aerospace and the Skinwalker Ranch.
I know all about Bigelow Aerospace.
With all his money and stuff, I hear, you know, when he had NIDS and all that, they were going around, they were grabbing this land, they were grabbing these people, they wanted to research all this. You come out with the Stardust story, and it's amazing at the stuff you're finding. And here's a regular Joe helping the community, helping these animals. And you say, "Hey, man, this stuff's real." You're not even putting cameras out. You're like, I can't put up the money for it. We don't need you to tell us this place has aliens and ghosts and stuff. It does. So if you guys want to do it, go ahead and do it. Have you ever been visited by a member of NIDS, which or Bigelow or anybody?
We
like
did.
That?
I mean, Robert Bigelow called me on the phone and asked me about the ranch, and I told him, yes, the ranch is everything that we've been saying it is. And he said, "Would you be willing to have one of our teams come down there and do an examination of the ranch and interview you?" And I said, "Sure, whatever is, you know, if it's going to lead to more, you know, understanding of what's happening here and, you know, get more facts and get us to the point where, you know, we can get a big picture idea of what's happening."
Right.
I'm all for it. So they sent two teams down with two different vehicles. One vehicle never even got here. It was loaded full of gear. And I guess it got about 4 or 5 miles from the ranch, and it just dropped dead. And they ended up, no matter what they did, they couldn't get it going again. They ended up having it towed back to Nevada. The other one showed up with two guys, and they spent, I don't know, 3, 4 days here, 5 days, every day doing interviews with me, doing interviews with my wife, walking the property. We did reenactments of the various different highlights or lowlights, whatever you want to call it, of the various incidents that occurred here. They, you know, told us that they used to be FBI guys that, you know, were hired away by Bigelow. And we did everything we could do to cooperate with them. They told us at the end of it they would provide us with a comprehensive report with pictures and video. And guess what? We never saw anything.
Yeah.
We still, to this day, never received anything from them. But I used to get calls 3 and 4 or 5 times a day directly from Robert Bigelow because he wanted to buy the ranch. Yeah. The problem was he didn't want to pay anything for it. And I told him, I said, look, you know, I am not going to be in a position here where I'm making payments on something that you own.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you want the ranch, you're going to have to pay for it. And that never happened. So indeed, we still have the ranch.
The now getting into the aspect of portals, right, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. In his front room.
Yeah. The these portals that you've brought up, is this how the aliens come and go? Do you think it's dimensional? Could this explain their disappearing after they die? What are your feelings on the portals, and can you describe them to us?
Well, what I can tell you is this. That is a very comprehensive question. We have two portals, two stargates, two whatever you want to call them. I mean, it, you know, tomato, tomato. And we have one that's living, or that is in our living room, that is in front of a fireplace. We have a big fireplace. And that one seems to be not frequently utilized, but occasionally. There is everybody who comes to the ranch who sits in the living room feels the energy. They, you know, they always remark about it. They always turn around and say, wow, I can feel something like right over there. And it's there. That's all I can tell you about that one. The big one is on the back of the property. And that one is the one that pretty much everything seems to come and go through.
Now, when you were, let me start out with this, your book, Ascension Code, okay?
Right.
Ascension, of course, everybody knows, it's the act of rising to an important position or a high level. Why the title Ascension Code?
Well, I'll tell you, I've lived a pretty wild and woolly life, and I've been pretty much a survivor. I've done, you know, a lot of people like to describe my life as being somewhere between like a Marvel comic book and Forrest Gump. It's just how it is. But after I got the ranch and we moved out here, I had to literally become sort of a different guy. I was no longer the tough guy from Chicago that basically met force with force head on. I had to become more thoughtful. I had to become more evolved. I had to become somebody that was willing to look at all the different aspects. And I had to start realizing something, and that is that, and this is something that my wife really taught me as much as anything, and that is love and kindness are the keys to everything in the world. It's the keys to being able to make whatever you want to have happen in the world occur. Because as long as you fight fire with fire, and as long as all you ever do is, you know, respond with violence, you're never going to get anywhere. You get a lot of scars on you, like I've got, a few bullet holes, a few knife wounds.
Right.
But you know what? You're not going to get yourself any closer to trying to become who you really want to be in life. And I realized after killing 18 of these different things, the Greys, that I wasn't getting anywhere. You know, all I was doing was basically, you know, just holding my position, you know, like somebody who was, you know, trying to hold a hill in a war someplace. But that wasn't getting me anywhere, and I wasn't feeling good about it, and, you know, I was miserable. Here I had spent well over $1 million on this ranch out of my own pocket, and, you know, I just felt like the whole thing was a failure. And I had just gotten to the point I was so depressed I could hardly stand it. And a friend of mine in Hawaii called me up in Tommy Hawk's blood, and literally for 3 years he kept saying, John, you got to tell your story. You know, you're not getting anywhere the way you are. And, you know, you feel, you know, depressed, shamed, angry, the whole works. And, you know, where's it taking you? And I finally thought about it, and I prayed on it a lot, and I just said, you know what? You're right. we're not getting anywhere. It's time to tell the story. It's time to give the world an opportunity to be part of this and to help us to try to come to a better understanding. That is, that understanding is truly the ascension process.
Well, that absolutely lets me know exactly what the thing about the brandings. I thought that actually, the Ascension Code, I thought that might have something to do with it. Can you explain the brandings and the notion of what or you think it is, these brandings?
Well, it's kind of a weird deal. I mean, like everything is here. But what happened was my wife and I were sitting in the living room, literally just watching a movie. And it was probably, I don't know, it wasn't that long after I did the Carrie Cassidy interview where she came out to the ranch and they did all the filming. And for no good reason at all of a sudden I felt like somebody had laid a red hot brand right on my right lower leg where the leg meets the ankle. And for about 6 inches there, it literally just created this incredibly painful, like a brand. And that's all I know about it. I mean, it took about a month for the wound to get to the point where it was semi-normal again. There's a scar. But I really don't know what it's about. Now,
it's
a friend of mine,
go ahead, Joe,
up in Nevada, had exactly the same experience.
Different
she's
type,
a woman,
different
very
type scarring.
Woman.
Was it a different type scarring, John, on the branding on her?
I honestly haven't really studied it to be able to tell you that. Yeah. All I can tell you is that when I described it to her, she goes, "John, that's exactly what happened to me."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, what is this about?" And she said, "That is something that I'll have to tell you in person." And I haven't had a chance yet to sit down with her, so I don't know what her point of view is, but she won't discuss it with me over the phone.
You know, I got to ask you, John, and I know we're running short on time. We've kept you over, brother. I'm sitting here looking at my alien right now. I have a 7-foot-tall alien in studio. I call him Alien Bob. He's a statue. Yeah. And I'm watching him out of the corner of my eye going, oh, what's going to happen here? But when you were battling this thing, people want to know the smell, the sound, you know, like if we were fighting, you'd hear grunting and groaning. What's the sound? What's the smell? What's the feel?
The smell is horrible. I mean, they smell like spoiled meat.
Oh.
So if you can imagine like a piece of, you know, big slab of meat that got thrown out in a dumpster on a, you know, hot July day and it'd been sitting in there for, you know, 10, 15 hours, has that really just, you know, just like, oh my God, you know, it smells like death.
Yeah.
That's what they smell like.
It sounds? Did he make sounds?
Sound-wise, they don't make a lot of sounds. I mean, you know, the only time I heard anything was when I, you know, ran one through with a sword and it went, that was about it.
Just the air. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, there you go. There's science. It's fun. There's another piece of the puzzle with the, you know, people that believe they're demonic. The rotting smell, Nathan. That's a classic demonic demon infestation. I'm not saying that I agree with it. Absolutely. You know, I don't know. But it's funny, the similarities between these things. I mean, who would have thought an alien smelled like rotting meat?
Well, I mean, it's like I said, it just happens to be this particular brand of alien. I mean, it's not they don't all smell that way.
And after all, Sean, I have shared hotel rooms with you, and the smell's not that much different.
Well, John, I tell you, I know we're running out of time, and I'm going to let Nathan take it over, brother, but what you're doing with Hopeful Hoofs and the things you're doing out there are amazing. And you believe in God, I believe in God, and you got to be blessed. And you would think that with this ranch, maybe what's kept you safe is your faith in God. And
well, it's my faith in God and the love of my wife. I mean, you know, my wife and I, we sat down, you know, when we realized that we'd kind of really stepped in it as far as buying this place.
Yeah.
And we just kind of made a whole bunch of rules. And, you know, those rules have really, really worked for us because they allow us to you know, shift in terms of perspective almost immediately when something starts to happen here. And so, you know, we're really, really able to reach out to each other and you know, use our love and the strength of our relationship, you know, to make this work.
You know, this is the last question, Nathan, I swear to God, and you can take it away. The pictures, John. I got to ask her. Everybody's going to be mad. The film crew came out. They took these pictures on your ramp, possibly the only ones we know or clearest ones we have of what we believe to be actual alien grays. How did you get these pictures, or how did they?
Well, I mean, they called us up, and they said, look, you know, we want to come out and help. And they were friends of Tommy Hawk's Blood, again. And they met him in California, traveled to the ranch with him, and they brought a truckload full of, you know, pretty high-tech video gear. They brought lasers that, as I understand it, are military-grade lasers. And, you know, they brought just really good equipment and set it up. And they were fortunate enough to be able to get the pictures that they got and some of the video they got. One of the neat, really neat things, and that is that we were able to recover an alien artifact because on the back of the property, one of the lasers directly hit one of these grays right in the chest, and it surprised him so much that he dropped, or she, or whatever it is, dropped this object. And this object looks like a, almost like a, it's like a rock, but it's got an insignia or emblem etched all the way through it. It's, you can see right through the rock. And so we have that. So we actually have an alien artifact.
Where is...
And Bigelow hasn't offered to buy that from you? Oh my God.
I think Bigelow's kind of done with all the UFO stuff, to tell you the truth. I think he's kind of moved on to, you know, hotels in space or something.
Well, we'll know if John sells, Nathan, because one day we'll have Edmund Suites in Las Vegas, Nevada. The alien drop-in.
Yeah, somebody asked me if I'd be willing to sell the alien artifact on eBay and what I'd start the bidding at.
Yeah, you don't sell some things like alien artifacts. But, Nathan, that's
your
all.
Your mom's wedding dress, the alien artifact.
Yeah,
you know
things
your
like
dad's
that.
Pipe. These are things you keep.
John, where do we go from here for Big John Edmonds? You have amazing stuff. I'm assuming you have the material back from the alien DNA stuff. Where do we go from here? When's CNN going to run this story, man?
Well, you know, it's weird because with all the different radio interviews we've done, we are starting to, you know, get television shows that want to do interviews. And so we're looking at having a couple of TV shows out here in the next few weeks. We've got people that are in the movie business, you know, that are, you know, pretty much A-listers. You know, they're calling us. And, you know, we're just going to continue to do everything the way we do it, which is on faith. And try to do it, you know, with you know, complete integrity, and just, you know, try to be the best example of good Americans we can be.
Hoorah! Well, how can people get to your website? How can they help out and donate to Hopeful Hoofs?
Well, what I would tell you is this: the easiest thing right now is just to go ahead and send a check directly to the ranch, and I will go ahead and send them back a receipt that is tax deductible, and so that way they have exact proof. I take phone calls from people. If somebody wants to call me, they can call me and talk to me. You know, the ranch is open to people with good intention that want to do something to increase, you know, the information about the ranch. So it's like, you know, if there are people that are, you know, scientific experts, engineers, you know, people that are more than, you know, just people that want to just come and, you know, treat it like alien Disneyland.
Yeah.
You know, we're not at that point yet where we're like doing tours or anything like that. We're not trying to make this into something commercial. You know, what we want is the truth. What we want is to be able to really get the big picture, understanding how this thing works and what the value to the world is.
Well, I tell you, John, we would love to come out.
John, you said that people can contact you. They can find your information at johnedmonds.info. That's your website.
Actually, what I would tell you is this. Go to johnedmonds411@gmail.com. That is my email that I use for this purpose. I can, you know, give you a phone number, and folks can use that if they want to call directly. But I would ask people that are only to call me if they are serious about trying to do something, you know, as far as, you know, doing something with the ranch directly. You know, I'm not, like I said, we're not alien, you know, Holiday Inn or anything like right. that.
No Disneyland. Well, I tell you
I'll
what.
I'll give you that number if that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, after the show, we'll get that number.
623-623-499-7759.
And I think you're only the second person in G&D history who's willing to give out their phone number to the thousands of people.
Well, you know, I look at it this way. I mean, we have to show and demonstrate, you know, our good intention. And, you know, we're asking people to just be, you know, solid with us and, you know, treat us right.
And, hey, John, if people just aren't interested in, like, the alien ranch, if they want to help out with Helpful Hooves, they can call you for that, too, correct?
Exactly. Or like I said, they can send a you know, a check directly to the ranch. It's 14700 South Tuthill Road. That's T as in Tom, U-T-H-I-L-L Road, Buckeye, Arizona, 85326. We used to use PayPal, but PayPal seems to have issues. So I'm just telling everybody, just send the check directly to the ranch, and I will respond.
Very good. Nathan, do you have anything else for John?
Do I have anything else?
John,
I
know,
let me
right?
Look through the list here.
I got 50 questions.
No, let's
questions.
Let John go back to doing his running a ranch here.
Well, let's ask John to stay on the line for just 3 more minutes. John, can you do that while we close out the show?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thanks brother. John. Everybody, John Edmund, Stardust Ranch and HopefulHoofs.org. What do you say we pay the bills, Nathan?
Yep, and one last time, goodbye, Nancy Reagan.
Goodbye, Nancy Reagan. Absolutely.
Little tear wiped away.
Yeah, she was awesome. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Attentive Home Healthcare. If you're in Indianapolis, guys, good people ready to help the ones you love. AttentiveHomeHealthcare.com. Twitch, TV, YouTube, iTunes, you name it, guys. We're there. From the hunted back roots of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.